orcs. Aggressive, brutish and warlike, these green-skinned xenos are the dominant species among the orcoids. Other species include the gretchens, snotlings and various squigs. Despite their society being primitive and brutal by nature, the orcoid race is one of the most successful in the entire galaxy and exceeds virtually any other race in numbers. However, due to their aggressive and warlike nature, this populous race is fragmented into hundreds of small empires, clans and tribes, waging war both among themselves and against other races. Yet even among such savages, there exists a hierarchy, for even the most primitive tribe needs someone capable of gathering this rabble and directing them towards a common goal. And today you will learn about perhaps the largest, toughest and greenest orc of those who lead this warlike race in the world of endless war. I am Warboss Gajkul Mag-Uruk Thraka, and I speak with the God's words. I am the Prophet of War, and all worlds shall burn under my feet. Gajkul Mag-Uruk Thraka, the Orc's Warboss, originating from the Goth clan and the mighty Prophet of War. By the end of the 41st millennium, he is the most influential Orc in the galaxy, with billions of greenskins waging war under his banners. Over time, Gajkul's power has only grown, and he has conducted countless devastating campaigns. He has decimated the forces of the Eldar, expelled the warp hordes of demons, and shattered the Necron phalanxes into brilliant, gleaming scrap. However, in his greatest battles, Gajkul has always fought against the servants of the Emperor of Mankind. Gajkul's merciless and relentless brutality has overtaken countless human worlds, leaving behind nothing but blazing ruins and turned the planet Armageddon into a boiling cauldron in an eternal slaughter. And yet, Gajkul has not finished his campaign. Gork and Mork have grand plans for their prophet, which they convey to the Orc in visions about agonizing in the Green Flames galaxy. By their command, Gajkul begins his greatest work. He will traverse the galaxy and gather every warlord, every Orc under his banners, and the stars themselves will shudder at the force of countless hordes. Gajkul is assembling the Great War, so vast and destructive that Gork and Mork themselves will lead it and drown the galaxy in the eternal flames of war. And the only one who stands in Gajkul's way is his nemesis, his favored enemy, Imperial Commissar Yarik. As the 41st millennium wanes, Gajkul's name is whispered in fear, not daring to be spoken aloud in many foreign tongues, for it has become synonymous with terror for the galaxy's inhabitants. But it was not always so. The greatest of the Orc warlords began his ascent to infamy as a common Orc warrior, living somewhere on the fringes. On the very edge of the Segmentum Solar lies a now frozen planet, once known as Urk, sparsely populated by the Greenskins. Its history is forgotten, buried by repeated invasions. But once this planet was called Eurycles and was colonized by an exploratory fleet that left Terra during the dark era of technology. It was located in the Zornian system, with streams of warp currents converging on it, turning it into an ideal transport hub. Humanity thrived on the mineral-rich Eurycles, and over centuries the colony filled with prosperous cities and busy spaceports. Undoubtedly, this was what attracted the Orcs. Like a dark tide, they overwhelmed Eurycles. The Orcs razed it to the ground and then left on a massive scrap fleet, disappearing into the warp in search of new victims. And as always, the Greenskins left their spores on the planet, which would one day bear fruit. Naturally, thanks to the warp currents, wandering interstellar beings found the habitable system time and again. Between periods of desolation, the planet served as an outpost for the Eldar, a home for the Spindorian swarm, and a labyrinth for the Hood. From time to time, the dormant Orc spores would sprout, and packs of greenskins grew in the planet's dark corners. And once, during the Great Crusade, humanity returned here. The Dark Angels, foremost among the legions, purged the planet of aliens and reclaimed it for mankind. The planet was once again named Eurycles. For more than two millennia, humans toiled in the mines, built hive cities, and worked in the spaceports on the planet's two moons. There were minor alien raids, but nothing serious happened until the mid-32nd millennium, when the system was struck by the Great War in the days of the War of the Beast. It was the greatest Orc invasion in the Imperium's history, The fire of countless battles engulfed all five segmentums. Soon, the Zornian system fell when the Greenskins captured Eurycles. The last surviving inhabitants of the world boarded a massive star hauler Dominion and fled into the suddenly tumultuous warp. The currents of the warp changed, making travel to and from the system difficult. Thus began a period of stagnation for the Orcs. For over 8,000 years, Eurycles, renamed Urk, was home to rivaling greenskin tribes. At first, they fought over the ruined cities, competing for the best loot. The battles decreased in scale, as did the piles of plunder. But the wars continued for millennia. No warlord could unite more than a handful of mountain tribes or clans, and thus, a lifestyle of equilibrium and desolation took hold. Small bands of greenskins fought over the ever-diminishing piles of scrap metal and spoiled mechanisms. In this grim cycle of senseless violence, Ghazkull was born. Perhaps the Imperium of Man inadvertently played a part in creating the most formidable orc of its era, perhaps of all time. After years of battling orcs and observing their actions in the border systems, the Imperium realized that under the right conditions, even small orc clans could reproduce at an alarming rate. The rise of a strong war boss could unite warring tribes, leading to a massive spore release. And if enough orcs gathered, they would become a beacon for the green-skinned inhabitants of nearby planets, drawing them into a universal migration growing at a frightening pace. Thus, in less than a decade, orcs could transform from a minor nuisance into a global threat. The Imperium decided that if a growing war could be detected and neutralized at an early stage, breaking and scattering the orcs would be easy. Therefore, outposts were established in systems where greenskins were known to proliferate. In the Zornian system, the Dark Angels constructed surveillance stations, managed from a command sanctum in the desert mountains of Ursae. From there, images and other information were transmitted to the nearest Dark Angels vessels. In this way, the Dark Angels could monitor both the greenskins and the wild humans living in the system, as they were always interested in new planets where battle-tested warriors could be recruited. Ironically, it was this mountain surveillance station that became the first step and launching point for Ghazkull's rise to greatness. Just-hatched Ghazkull was then a mere boy of the Goth clan participating in a raid on the Astartes command sanctum. Even a station hidden deep in the rocks of the distant Urk Ridge was not safe from the ubiquitous greenskins. It was the Orcs, searching for scrap metal, who discovered the secret base and decided to loot it, thus activating the automatic defense systems. During the first assault on the base, Ghazkull was hit in the head by a bolter round, a direct hit that cracked a large part of his cranium and tore a significant portion of the brain. Perhaps young and bleeding, Ghazkull would have been left to die if not for two circumstances. Firstly, Ghazkull himself got up on his feet, and the Goths always respected toughness and resilience. They also knew very well that the particularly mad painboy of the Death Skulls paid well for fresh meat. On that day, carrion birds did not feast on Ghazkull, as his own mob guided him onwards. Ghazkull stumbled forward not knowing where, holding his leaking brains with both hands. But the mob took him to the Death Skulls' outpost on Rustspike. There, his own gang sold the future warboss to Mad Doc Grotsnik for a total fee of 3 teeth and a new chopper. Ghazkull emerged from unconsciousness immediately after Mad Doc completed the main operation. The fact that he awoke surprised everyone, for Grotsnik had replaced part of Ghazkull's skull and brain with bionics, wires and squig tissues, all pressed down with welded adamantium plates. But this was far from the last surprise. Now Ghazkull saw everything more clearly than ever before. It was not a matter of vision or the new bionic eye, which, to tell the truth, was always a bit unfocused. Rather, for the first time in his short life, Ghazkull truly awoke and realized that his destiny was to unite the entire orc kind and lead them to the greatest war of all times. He now believed he was the messenger of Gork and Mork, the great green gods, and had been chosen as the living embodiment of their divine wishes. The orcs wanted him to lead the greenskins to the greatest battles of the galaxy. The first to fall under Ghazkull's studded boots was Dregmek, the war boss of the Death Skulls. Ghazkull barely stepped out from the filthy tent of Mad Doc, rubbing his gleaming adamantium bald head. when the war boss appeared. Striding through the street between the ramshackle huts typically built by the Death Skulls, Dregmek demanded an answer from the Goth, asking what the hell he thought he was doing in the Rust Spike. Behind Dregmek, his entourage of knobs laughed, anticipating a merry fray, and Gajkull moved forward, clenching his knobbly fists, not even glancing at the formidable heavy combi weapon that the war boss of the Death Skulls waved. Dregmek, expecting just this from a Goth, opened fire. All barrels of his tricked-out gun blazed, the air filled with flying bullets and the bright, blinding flash of 6 muzzle flashes. Perhaps it was a sign from Gork, or maybe from Mork. Divine intervention, the salvation of the Prophet. Though explosions bloomed at his feet and projectiles sliced the air a hair's breadth away, Gajkull walked unharmed. The clang of fallen casings, the howl of empty charges, desperate clicks on the trigger, the heavy steps of iron boots, and finally, the screech of Dregmek's rusty, collapsing iron jaw were heard opened. And then Gajkull began to beat, and so commenced a bare-handed beating so severe that the tribe's chieftains roared and ululated, involuntarily delighting in the spectacle. A devastating blow with Gajkull's new armoured forehead concluded the affair with a resonant crash. Standing over the fallen body of his foe, Gajkull declared that this was only the beginning. He roared, shouting to the astonished onlookers that he was the Prophet of Gork and Mork, and added in a booming, bullish voice that if anyone else wished for entertainment and to be knocked senseless as the war boss just had, he would be more than pleased to oblige. And no matter if they came one by one or all at once. After a full hour of a good fight, in which Gajkull notably received nothing more serious than a scratch, he became the rightful ruler of Rust Spike, though it was hard to tell with such huge bruises under his eyes and heads spinning from blows. To his new followers, it seemed Gajkull grew before their eyes. Having crushed all the tribes within his reach from the citadel, Gajkull began to assemble a horde. In addition to the Death Skulls who had served Dregmek, several bands of Goths now served the young war boss. Stories of Gajkull's deeds began to spread among the villages built right on the dumps and the hastily erected strongholds of the Greenskins. Orcs left their tribes, gravitating towards Rust Spike, wishing to become part of something grander than the tiny bands fighting over piles of ancient refuse. They wished to wage war under a new boss, who claimed to converse directly with Gork and Mork themselves, and also promised to one day find them a worthy fight. Soon, Rust Spike became so overcrowded that one could not spit without hitting the ground, prompting Gajkull to head west. Upon the fractured plains of the Dabig Wasteland, Gajkull faced his first challenge. He entered the territory of the Bad Moons, the wealthiest and most envious of the local clans. They were led by Boss Snazdaka, and no one could rival the firepower of his brilliantly yellow battlewagon brigade. When Snazdaka saw Gajkull's hordes approaching, he ordered his totem pole raised and the tents folded. His tribe set off more swiftly than a runthird could kick an irked squig. In the relentless skirmishes that followed, Snazdaka's orcs bombarded Gajkull's attacks with salvos and then skedaddled before they could retaliate. Gajkull had already demonstrated his superior negotiation skills, overpowering, pummeling, and trampling everyone who dared challenge. But now, he was to be tested in cunning and tactics. However, the promising warlord showcased not only his superiority, but also genuine oratory mastery, which made his serving orcs jubilantly scream, raising their fists to the air. In just a few days, Gajkull prepared a series of countermeasures, each becoming an insurmountable obstacle for the Bad Moons. He and his boys raided Snazdaka's supply depots, where Snazdaka refueled his wagons. Then Gajkull used the wind and ordered part of the barracks set aflame. Thick, acrid smoke billowed over the fractured plains, obscuring his warriors' movements and hampering the Bad Moons' retreat, forcing them into engagement. Yet what impressed the Green Skins the most was that Gajkull convinced the fleetest orc on the planet to join him by outpacing him in a one-on-one race. All witnesses concurred that only the might of Gork and Mork themselves could have allowed the now gigantic Goth war boss to outrun the great speed boss Shazfrag of the Evil Suns. Gajkull's plans worked time and again, depleting Snazdaka's forces until his defeat became inevitable. Then, in front of a humiliated Snazdaka, Gajkull ordered the mech boys of the Bad Moons to construct him a massive power claw from the wreckage of their own shattered tanks. Thus, the orcs of the Bad Moons clan submitted to him. Gajkull's horde grew so vast that no gang nor tribe on all of Urk could withstand its furious onslaught. Only the most foolish and stubborn orcs stood in the path of this hurricane-like greatest champion of their kind. One such obstinate fool was the boss of the snake bites, Grudbolg. Gajkull spent a long and bloody week to subdue the clan and win Grudbolg's loyalty. He had to decapitate the scar-covered old monster twice. Having received a challenge from the enormous champion of the Goths, Ugrak Gajkull attacked him like a belligerent machine, driving his opponent a whole foot into the ground, pounding him into unconsciousness. The nobs accompanying Ugrak were so astonished by the defeat of their invincible leader that they did not even notice Gajkull approaching. Enraged, the prophet of Gork and Mork scattered the nobs, knocking them out too. When clarity returned to Ugrak's and his nobs' minds, they consciously swore allegiance to Gajkull. Battles of attrition had been exhilarating the orcish spirit on the surface of Uruk for 8 millennia. Smaller tribes constantly rose and fell, each time butting heads with both enemies and themselves. Throughout these years, no great leader was born within the endless cycle. No one had been able to unite the tribes during this time, until now. It took Gajkull another 6 years to subjugate all of Urk. Having grown larger than any leader ever seen on the planet, Gajkull reveled in his strength. Inspired by the spirit of the gathering war and impassioned speeches by the leader about the conquest of the stars, the greenskins busily colonized the surface. Even ancient ships were directed towards the planet. Orcs from all over the Zornian system flew to Urk like moths drawn to the flame of a common cause. For the first time in many centuries, the planets worked together, building what they had not even dared to dream of. Never before had they managed to pool their meager resources together. But now, all piles of scrap were heaped together. Insane energies spread across the region as mechs cobbled together vast battle fortresses, new weapons and huge machines of destruction. All over Urk, the greenskin moved with a single sense of purpose, an astonishing awareness of their duty, the very reason for their being. And then the sun itself trembled. All the greenskins looked up at the suddenly dimmed sun, which had always illuminated the skies of Urk. All of them shuddered, except Gajkull. Superstitious orcs threw down their weapons and spanners, staring at the sky, their mouths agape in wonder. Suddenly the sun flared up brightly, sparkled, and then its rays dimmed again. Gajkull addressed the trembling greenskins in a thundering voice, saying it was a sign from Gork and Mork. It meant that it was time to leave Urk, that it was time for the galaxy to feel the might of the rising war. With each word of the leader, the beam of green light around him became brighter, illuminating the prophet of the great green gods. He ordered his followers to gather all the weapons and ammunition, for they would leave in a week. Since there were no flying craft on Urk, and the mechs had only begun to assemble new ones, some greenskins wondered how they would fly. However, a single stern look from Gajkull was enough to silence them, instilling in the orcs, if not confidence, then at least a fear of inconvenient questions. The dawn of the following day never came, but it was not the odd behavior of the Urk star at all. The currents of the warp had changed once again, as if returning to times immemorial, churning and looping the tides of another world, hurled a vast space hulk into the realm of reality, and belched a fused behemoth into the Zornian system. Now, this hulk drifted in orbit around Urk, blocking the light of the flickering sun. With every flare from the tormented sun of Urk, radiation storms spread, and therefore Gajkull approached the mechs and told them to secure the space hulk using super-heavy traction weapons. Part of the available spacecraft, equipped with harpoon rockets, was also put into action, fired to pin the giant hulk to one of Urk's two moons. For a time, the space hulk was secured, but everyone understood that it was only temporary. By Gajkull's order, all orcs gathered rushed to assist the mechs. They worked non-stop, assembling as many transport ships as possible. Of course, only 100 of them could truly be called ships, while the rest were built for a one-way flight. There were hundreds of such primitive rockets. Each was unguided and stuffed from floor to ceiling with green skins. Climbing atop the largest of the makeshift ships, Guzhkul led the Great Exodus to seize the space hulk. Flames erupted from both the rockets and from the untimely explosions and collisions in the sky. The launched vessels left the planet. Some of the ships crashed into the outer decks of the space hulk and exploded, ripping gaping breaches in its hull. Others breached it, carrying the boys into the depths of the holds. The most reliably assembled rockets and vessels managed to fly around the space hulk and find landing spots, or more often, fly through the huge holes left by less fortunate fellows. However, as is usually the case, the hulk was inhabited. Right after the initial incursion, the first wave of greenskins was attacked by warp spawns. Burner boys, melting their way through bulkheads, had to swiftly switch from cutting through metal to defending themselves against a whole stream of demons. Clouds of chemical orange fire met volleys of sorcerous blue flame. Burner boys found worthy foes in the rolling pink horrors. Even before the final landing of the ships, the most agile speed freaks were jumping off the cargo ramps and rushing through the cave-like corridors, firing all their guns. Although after the incursion, less than half of the damned ships might have taken off, they were ordered to take off and head to Urk to capture more boys for the fight. The battle for the demon-infested cosmic wanderer was fierce and took place in an ever-changing environment. No quarter was asked for or given. Orcs and demons tore each other apart in narrow corridors and turned entire cargo decks into slaughterhouses, where whole armies clashed face to face. Fresh hordes of demons burst from the depths of the space hulk, while greenskin rockets breached the hull, throwing orcs out. The Xenos slowly pushed back the demonic forces. Yet, at every crossroads, ambushes awaited them. The losses were substantial. The mad Doc Grotznik himself led the seize of the landing deck of what once must have been a human transport. Inside the vessels parked within the ship, skeletons of long-dead crews still lay. The few still capable of flight were seized by the orcs for troop transportation. Meanwhile, the knobs of the Goths were making their way to an asteroid that turned out to be deep within the space hulk. There, in the magma-scorched tunnels, their rusty power claws met with hellblades, and only thanks to Ugrak's flamethrower were they able to clear the path. In the vast holds, the battle wagons swept away any resistance with their death rollers, but they were awaited by soul grinders, fearsome demon engines, tearing apart orc machinery and the orcs themselves with their metallic claws. And the soul grinders were stalked by the tank boosters among the green-skinned, climbing through ventilation shafts to positions suitable for firing. Circling smoke rockets exploded upon hitting the unnatural monsters, tearing them to shreds. Flames and ichor flew in all directions, and following the advancing boys were the mech boys, patching up holes, sealing airlocks, and repairing damaged war machines. And these battles stretched on for weeks, during which billions of green skins were transported from the surface of Urk to the space hulk. Guzhkul himself led the breakthrough to the center of the space hulk. There, in the black heart of fused and collided ships, lay the envoy of forgotten times, the huge star freighter Dominion. Having left Urk, then known as Eurycleus, and fled from the invasion of the Greenskins, the ship had become lost in the warp. Its frightened human cargo and crew attracted the attention of the monstrous entities dwelling there. Now the Dominion had returned home. But in the place of its warp engines now lay a vast rift, a sinister hole from which the energies of the Immaterium spilled out. Driving the demonic forces before him, Guzhkul ordered his Wah to shoot at the reality rift. But to his fury, it was to no avail. With a bestial roar, leaking pure green energy from his reforged skull, Guzhkul charged at the breach and struck. The warboss's even greater fury was sparked by the Power Claw's impotence. And then, issuing a deafening challenge, Guzhkul headbutted the rift with all his might. Green flame flashed, a resounding snap was heard, and finally the hole folded into itself and vanished. It was unclear whether this was caused by the force of the impact or the latent psychic energy of Guzhkul, but the deed was done. The demonic threat was ended, for the time being. The space hulk, dubbed by Guzhkul as the World Killer, was now completely under the control of the Greenskins. And in the moment when Uruk was engulfed by fiery gas clouds, the World Killer returned to the warp. The war for the galaxy had begun. It remains unknown how long Gajkul and his followers drifted in the warp. Time there matters not, and the Orcs keep no records. They explored their vast hulk, finding strange machines, remnants of a dark human past, and other devices beyond understanding of the Orc. For many, especially the Death Skulls, these explorations involved looting everything, particularly that which was not bolted down. Working alongside burner boys who cut through metal with their arc welders, the Orcs were able to repurpose everything for their own needs. While the majority of mechs worked on constructing force field generators at the behest of Gajkul, the rest adapted Orcish life as usual. The sporadic skirmishes over technological refuse kept the Orcs from boring, and many precious specimens of technology were repurposed into war tracks, battle wagons, stompers, or armor for nobs. Some Orcs were so obsessed with collecting scrap that they reached the outer hull of the Space Hulk and were swept into the warp. It was precisely this folly that allowed demons to breach into the world of the Kill once again. Over time, the demonic invasion became impossible to ignore, and Gajkul personally led the fight. As battles raged aboard, the Orcs were content, and the Space Hulk literally became imbued with the energies of the Wah. The Greenskins reproduced rapidly, filling the sectors of the colossal ship. Gradually, the demonic assault weakened until it ceased altogether with the sudden re-emergence of the Space Hulk into real space. Sirens blared throughout the compartments. Warboss Gajkul issued orders, readying the Orcs for a new battle. As the World Killer hurtled towards the planet, knocking aside orbital structures and stray ships that failed to dodge the flying wall of cosmic debris, it descended like an avalanche from a quiet slope. It was like thunder amidst clear skies. The defenders of Armageddon were unprepared for what awaited them. Though the Imperial Guard and the Armageddon Planetary Defense Forces were well equipped, they were utterly unprepared for the waves of greenskins that overran their armies. Humanity underestimated the strategic abilities of their foes. They had fought Orcs before, but these greenskins were different. This was not a standard attack by some minor warlord. This was Gajkul's Wah. Although none of his nobs displayed the apparent bravery and cunning of their leader, Gajkul had drilled enough tactics into their skulls for some of them to follow it. They easily crushed the legions of the planetary defense forces, which had advanced from the hive cities of the planet to hold back the greenskins. Initially, the Orcs began their assault to pin down the enemy on the flat ash wastelands, while hordes of bikers and squads of battle wagons rode around to surround their foes, cutting off their supply lines. Then the Greenskins tightened the noose. They set up their mech big guns batteries to hit the panicking defenders left in an ever-decreasing cauldron. Desperate attempts to escape were met with bursts of automatic gunfire. Mercilessly, the Orcs mowed down everything that moved, laughing over the rows of humans who walked towards their death, grimacing one last time on the blood-soaked ash. Once the plains were cleared, the Orcs moved on to the Hive cities, where they found themselves surprised. The Hives, built atop the expansive ash deserts, towered above the mountains. These were the great factory cities of the Imperium, vital for its ceaseless military endeavors. This industrial might was on a scale the Orcs had never before seen. The mechs looked on the Hives with glee, imagining what they could build with such colossal reserves of materials. The defense mounted by the Imperium proved more formidable. The strength of the Imperial Guard was bolstered by every available regiment, along with hastily armed citizens. Long rows of trenches and redoubts encircled each massive wall complex. Gajkul took one look at the high Vulcanus before boldly swearing it would fall within 2 solar days. Although his hordes were numerous enough to crush the gates, Gajkul did not wish to squander his forces needlessly. He still had yet to unleash the full terror of his Gargants, but considered saving their immense firepower for when it was truly needed. Instead, his plan to capture the vast factory city reflected his cunning. It was all simple. It only required flawless execution and impeccable teamwork. A difficult task for the typical Wah, leader, but not for one such as Gajkull. Swift squads of Wartrak with armored wedges targeted the outer barriers. The first wave carried rams to breach the outer walls, using their tracks to drive unimpeded over the rubble. The second wave of attackers followed behind the smoking orc battle wagons. This was the mobile infantry, mostly comprised of ordinary Goth boys with mobs of burner boys among them. The third wave consisted of burner boys with scorchers who were ordered to break through breaches and sweep any defense with powerful flames. Tractor beams opened fire by turning as the battle wagons cleared the last trench. Filled wagons burst inside at maximum speed as soon as the doors were blown off their hinges. Secondary plans included storm boys and stompers, which were to breach gaps at strategic positions. By the time the infantry waves were finally released, they could enter the Hive Volcanus at any moment. The plan worked well. The Hive would have fallen within one solar day if not for its fierce resistance. Within the narrow confines of the Hive's underground passages, desperate humans resorted to all manner of traps and ambushes. Despite their heroism, hundreds of thousands of orcs broke into Hive Volcanus, and its population was killed or enslaved. After the Hive was captured, the remaining Hive cities of Armageddon Prime soon followed. Columns of human refugees stretched beyond the horizon. All of Armageddon Prime lay under the massive metallic boot of Gajkull. Former manufactories had been transformed into orc workshops. Captured humans toiled unto death, depriving their own cities of all resources, which the mech boys utilized to fuel the green-skinned war machine. Wah! Moved southward towards the densely populated continent of Armageddon Secundus. For humans, it was quite unusual to gain respect from orcs, especially those green-skinned beings led by battle-thirsty Goths, such as Gajkull. And although the Space Marines were respected for their combat skills, it was truly the Imperial Commissar who elicited the greatest admiration among the orcs. This was an uncompromising warrior who would shoot his own troops as readily as the enemy if necessary for victory. Commissar Sebastian Yarik was undoubtedly a thorn in Gajkull's side, as the Greenskins believed that he alone had helped the defenders of Hive Hades hold out for so long. Orcs gradually learned from their prisoners that the defenders of Hades had come to fear Yarik as much as they feared Gajkull's wrath. To the orcs, he was the type of leader they could respect. The fact that he donned the Goths' colors, black with red trimming, further increased his esteem among them. It was said that of all Gajkull's foes, Yarik was the only one he ever cursed. Indeed, high praise. Those orcs who came face to face with the infamous Umibos often expressed disappointment. Yarik was merely the size of a human, though this was not often recalled because he wielded an orc power claw and had the evil eye. Among the boys, rumors circulated that orcs who realized whom they were facing always died quickly. Standing with gape-jawed, incredulous at Yarik's offensive insignificance, thereby remaining vulnerable to a fatal blow. The cunning orcs recognized the value of this tactic, even if it was a tricky and despicable trick characteristic of nothing so much as the blood axes. The Armageddon's season of shadows approached, a cyclic time when the volcanic mountains of the planet erupted and the skies turned dark red. For the orcs, this was another sign of impending victory. To reach Armageddon Secundus, the orcs had to cross a band of equatorial jungles, which humans considered impassable. It was a foul swamp of mud pits that could swallow entire armies at once, and it was filled with ferocious wild beasts. The greenskins relished this, attacking the flora and fauna while the mech boys constructed pontoon bridges or projected force fields across the swamp. Thanks to their momentum and ingenuity, the orc hordes advanced faster than the Imperial armies. Infantry, armored tank columns, thundering stompers and towering gargants crossed the crude bridges and emerged on the far side of the jungles. Again, the orcs caught the humans off guard, breaking through their defensive positions. As the orcs surged through the ash deserts toward the Hive cities, gigantic Imperial war machines and tank squadrons rolled out into the wasteland to meet them. From this moment, the battles became fiercer, and the orcs' losses started to mount. The initial clash occurred in the scorched desert known as the Death Barrens. While the colossal war machines of the Iron Skull's Titan Legion battled the Gargants, massed tank assaults began to punch huge holes in the orc hordes. The greenskins did not flinch and, though slower, continued to advance into this thunderous onslaught. With a clangor advancing forward, these ironclad Xenos walked through the hail of shells. The land armada of Death Dreads, Killer Cans, and the cumbersome Morkanauts crashed into the enemy's armored formations. Explosions illuminated the plains as power claws ripped turrets off, buzzing saws reached for enemy crews, and the screams of eviscerated victims were music to the ears of the orcs. When the enemy tanks turned into smoking ruins, Stompers and Death Dreads used their firepower to tip the scales in an evenly matched fight between the Gargants and Titans. From the destroyed Imperial Titans rose tall mushroom clouds, and the striking blasts from their detonations killed many orcs. Yet, when the shockwave ceased, the green tide flowed again over the vast craters. Subsequent battles escalated the Armageddon War to a new level of destructiveness. Humans knew what awaited them in case of defeat and fought desperately for every meter of ground. The orcs managed to destroy the Infernus Hive after the Blood Axes struck a deal with a corrupt governor, but they could not breach the defenses of Hades and Hell's Reach. In desperation, Imperial Command launched viral bombs, one of the most destructive types of weaponry. Hundreds of thousands of orcs died, but the survivors continued their advance. Due to the stupidity and confusion of their commanders, Gajkull was forced to personally lead the siege. The war boss used a multitude of tactical moves: lightning-fast raids, deceptive maneuvers, massed assault waves, carpet bombings, airborne strikes by storm boys, and the simultaneous capture of underground communications by commandos. All this allowed the capture of Hellsreach. With every strike, the orcs penetrated deeper into the city until Gajkull gathered numerous weird boys on the blood-soaked streets and ordered them to unleash a powerful psychic storm which destroyed the minds of the remaining hive defenders. However, what allowed the destruction of Hellsreach did not work on the approaches to the hive Hades. Storm boys failed to break through the anti-air defenses, commandos were cut down in the tunnels, and a Gargant was destroyed in a suicidal attack. The city's defense, organized by Commissar Yarik, remained unshakable, and the Commissar himself became an increasingly notorious figure among the orcs. Gajkull was furious. Capturing the Hive Hades became a matter of principle for him. Time and again testing the Hive's defenses, Gajkull did not even notice the significant defeat of his army near the Hive Acheron. The flames of orbital bombardment engulfed the orc heads. And when the explosions finally subsided and the sky cleared, thousands of thunderhawks hurtled towards the planet. The Space Marine assault on Armageddon had arrived. The Blood Angels, Ultramarines and Salamanders made the orcs taste the bitterness of a crushing defeat. Perhaps, had Gajkull intervened personally, the orcs might have been able to turn the tide of battle and Armageddon would have fallen. However, the desire to destroy Hive Hades became an obsessional idea. In the bloody haze of battles, Gajkull no longer received visions. His only desire was to grind into bloody dust with his boots all those who dared to challenge him. And in the end, he succeeded. The defense of Hades fell, and the orcs broke into the hive. The Astartes arrived too late to assist the defenders. The entire hive was slaughtered to the last man. Ultimately, Gajkull gathered his remaining forces and besieged Hive Tartarus. The fate of the planet hung in the balance, and everything that was left at the orcs' disposal was thrown into this battle. However, as the orc Stompers and Morkanauts had already breached the hive gates, a steel rain of drop pods fell upon the Xenos. The Astartes dispersed the ranks of the orcs, seizing the initiative from the attackers. The greenskins were repelled and continued to retreat until Gajkull himself entered the battlefield. His furious counterattack could have turned the tide of the battle. But right in the midst of the fight, the warlord and his bodyguards simply vanished. The news of Gajkull's disappearance quickly spread among the orcs, spelling their doom. With no one left to gather and organize the fragmented orc hordes, those Xenos that survived took cover in the underground tunnels and equatorial jungles. Some believed that Gajkull had fled, others thought him dead. A few orcs believed that the Hand of Mork himself had saved their warlord at the last moment. Either way, Gajkul Mag-Uruk Thraka left the planet. Leaving Armageddon, Gajkul did not succumb to inactivity. He did not perceive this campaign as a failure. On the contrary, Armageddon was merely the beginning. And now the plan was clearer than ever. Humans made a huge mistake by not immediately pursuing the warlord. Only Yarik demanded an immediate hunt for the orc. However, no one heeded the commissar's words. The Imperial Command thought that Gajkul, if he survived, no longer posed a threat. As trying to gather orcs around him again, he would most likely be immediately killed, gaining the reputation of a loser. But they were wrong. Indeed, after losing a major battle, orcs often kill their failed leader. And Gajkul indeed had to remind some clans of his greatness. But soon the orc fully restored his influence, not only by brutally killing the most stubborn, but also by inspiring words. Gajkul declared that the gods had revealed the truth to him. To destroy your enemy, you need to know them well. For the orcs, this concept was revolutionary and profound. They accepted the fact that the whole war was merely reconnaissance, an experiment intended to see the humans' reaction to a mass invasion. Indeed, coming from an isolated planet, Gajkul learned a lot new in this war. Now it was time to regroup, gather fresh forces, and lead a new war sweeping through star systems. Gajkul's forces remained on Armageddon. Only the most trusted nobs moved with the warlord to another orc world, Golgotha. Once this planet was populated by humans, but since then millennia had passed, and the planet changed many owners until orcs finally came to it. However, that war had long since ebbed, and like a Urk, Golgotha became a refuge for many fragmented small tribes. Gajkul went on a unifying campaign again, killing bosses and gathering orc tribes. Rumors about him quickly spread across the planet, and many orcs began to seek out the new war boss themselves. During this time, fulfilling his vow, Yarik set off in pursuit of his sworn enemy, chasing him for a decade. Gajkul exerted all his might to save the remnants of his forces, attacking with his rearguard only out of necessity. Sebastian attempted to end the confrontation in one fell swoop, forcing his adversary to land on the once imperial planet of Golgotha. At first, it seemed that the Yarik's victory was near. However, due to the short-sightedness of the Commissar, it suddenly became clear that Golgotha was a trap. At a pivotal moment, the forces of the Imperium received a stab in the back from a second, smaller war from the Goths, personally led by Gajkul. Following this, an orc space hulk emerged from behind the moon of Golgotha to drive the Imperial fleet from the planet's orbit. Throughout the battle, the orcs used two armored trains, one of which was destroyed and the other became the cause of the Imperial Guard's defeat. Gajkul and his greenskins attacked the defenders of the Imperium with such ferocity that even the heroic Commissar himself could not withstand him. His forces were scattered, and Sebastian Yarik was taken prisoner. Quickly assessing the situation, Yarik began to organize an uprising among the human slaves. Since the workers were used by the orcs as slave labor, the humans managed to compile a rough map of most of the space hulk. Yarik wanted to attack the huge structure resembling an orc head, believing it to house their god's temple, and accordingly, Gajkul. But other prisoners convinced him to attempt an escape and to warn the Imperium. Reluctantly, Sebastian agreed, and when the time came, one of the worker gangs detonated the orc's large weapons cache. Alas, the escape was foiled because the necessary ship was in the process of being upgraded by a mech. Faced with this problem, the group's pilot made a sacrificial act but launched the spaceship, leading to another massive explosion that allowed Yarik to flee. Having no other choice, the remaining people on the Space Hulk were forced to attack the Orc's temple, which was actually the Space Hulk's bridge, and each member of the group sacrificed themselves in turn so that Sebastian could reach the top of the structure and his hated enemy. But this too did not end in success. When Yarik reached the bridge, he found only several mechs. With enemy pursuit behind, the Commissar was forced to resort to the last resort, to activate all the ship's systems at once, to tear it apart. Yarik saw that extensive destruction was flaring up from one side of the Space Hulk and prepared to give his soul to the Emperor, thinking he would perish. But a few days later, Sebastian awoke astonished. with newly installed bionics. Leaving the room, he was greeted by hundreds of orcs who began to cheer him on. The commissar was escorted by the greenskins to the nearest hangar, where Gajkull awaited him next to a shuttle. Yarik expected to have to fight, but Gajkull simply stepped aside, declaring that it had been a good fight. And now Yarik must return to Armageddon and prepare for the orcs' return, for a new battle will soon erupt. Gajkull, having released Yarik, informed his astonished subordinates that a good enemy is hard to find. He implied that he wanted to enjoy his confrontation with the commissar and did not wish for it to end so simply. Yarik, arriving on Golgotha, soon returned with forces provided by the Adeptus Mechanicus and a massive weapon known as the Ordinatus Golgotha, driving the orcs from the world. Yet Gajkull fled again. By the onset of the Third War for Armageddon, Golgotha had been seized by orc forces. Had the Imperium gathered and analyzed data on all of Gajkull's attacks, they would have noticed a troubling pattern. However, the bureaucratic machinery of the Imperium is too cumbersome, and the state is already constantly fighting various threats. From the year 945 to 996 of the 41st millennium, orc attacks became more frequent, and in the year 997, Gajkull formed an alliance with Nazdreg Ug-Udgrub, testing innovative teleporter technology to send an entire army of orcs to the imperial world of Piscina IV. Only the Dark Angels were then able to save the planet from destruction. Over the 57 years following the Second War for Armageddon, Gajkull gathered his forces and prepared for a new invasion. He meticulously analyzed the entire course of the previous war and fully understood his mistake at Hive Hades. Meanwhile, the Imperial Command strengthened the defenses of both the planet and the entire star system after the orcs nearly captured it. New orbital stations and platforms, patrol groups of ships, and a network of reconnaissance satellites elevated Armageddon's defenses to a level second only to Holy Terror itself. However, this was of no consequence to Gajkull, and his freshly assembled armada again set out for Armageddon. On the feast of the Emperor's Ascension, the orcs came to the planet. The battle in space lasted 2 days, and the dawn of the third illuminated numerous orc dropships. Following them were hordes of atmospheric fighters and bombers. This time, Gajkull decided not to fight for Hive Hades, clearly remembering the previous attempt. He simply dropped several asteroids on the Hive, destroying the entire city along with its inhabitants and defenders in this act of vengeance. Laser defense platforms fired non-stop, inflicting monstrous losses on the orcs. The surface began to experience a continuous rain of ash and debris. Feral orcs, remnants from the previous war and commandos, broke out from the jungles and mountains to join their brethren. The orcs swiftly captured defense platforms and macro cannons, immediately turning them against their former owners. Airfields were quickly constructed, allowing the orc atmospheric air force to gain air superiority. Any attempts by the Imperials to establish a defense were immediately overwhelmed by massive fire and bombings. Thanks to their preparation and unrestrained fury, the orcs gained the upper hand in every battle. This remained the case until the Astartes once again arrived on the planet. The Emperor's angels again employed the tactic of lightning-fast attacks, dispersing and annihilating the Xenos. However, Gajkull remembered the past errors well and prepared a couple of surprises. Hive Acheron fell thanks to traitors within the city. After that, to aid the orcs in the Ash Wastes, Gajkull issued an order to activate another surprise. From the orbit, huge chunks broke off from the space hulks and orc rocks and hurtled towards the planet. Gajkull remembered well those lightning-fast attacks by space marine drop pods that had continuously hampered his advance. And although the orc army never complained about mobility, they couldn't compare in this regard with the Astartes. But the rocks were meant to change everything. These were hollowed-out, armed pieces of asteroids filled with orcs, which hurtled towards the planet at the very last moment, slowing their descent with engines. The rocks fell all over the planet, not only where something needed to be destroyed, but also in completely uninhabited regions of Armageddon. The rocks themselves were quite an effective weapon, as the shockwave after the landing could cause serious destruction. But that was not the main goal. The rocks that fell on the Astartes' positions carried teleport homers, allowing the orcs to send reinforcements at an incredible speed. Despite the Astartes intensifying their attack, the rocks did their job, putting the Imperial forces in a very awkward position. And Gajkull was not intending to give the humans a respite. On the contrary, he decided to employ another weapon from his vast arsenal of destruction. Every clan has its mad orcs, but the evil sons had more than most, the cults of speed. These orcs were literally obsessed with fast riding. Gajkull kept them in reserve, which was literally killing these orcs. Because while they sat in the back, their brethren were already having fun out there. And only the example of evil Sun's warlord, Gurbag and his bike, whom Gajkull had literally turned into a bloody mess of orc flesh and scrap, kept these speed freaks from reckless actions. But after the specially selected teleporter mobs went to sow chaos in the enemy ranks, these true speed freaks were finally able to take part in the battle. The orcs of the cults of speed were able to slip through even the slightest breach in the enemy's defense, and when this breach needed to be widened, they brought the powerful weaponry of their vehicles into play, tearing guardsmen to pieces and creating a bloody gate of passage for their troops. They raced towards the Ash Wastelands, forming bands named like the Red Wheels or Burning Death. And as they sped across the plains of the wastelands, the trail of ash, dust and exhaust gases could compete in volume with the toxic discharges of Gargants, which were visible from space. Occupied with countless battles across the planet, Imperial officers could barely discern any pattern. They believed there was no plan at all to the orcs' actions. However, they were mistaken. This entire attack was meticulously planned by Gajkull down to the smallest detail. In the uninhabited regions where the stones landed, support points were established, gathering Xenos armies and from whence reinforcements were continually delivered via teleporters. But when the Imperials advanced towards these support points, they fell into a trap. Orcs from the Speed Freaks continuously struck at the Imperial columns. Zagbos Skargrim, the leader of the Burning Death with his squad, decimated entire regiments of the Imperial Guard, leaving behind burning bodies and machinery. And in the skies, meanwhile, the orcs engaged in true rivalry over the tally of destroyed targets. Often this resulted in aerial combat amongst the orcs, when a frustrated pilot, finding his target already destroyed, decided to vent his anger on one of his own allies. While the forces of the Imperium focused on destroying the support points and hunting the orcs from the speed freaks, Gajkull decided it was time to attack the Hive cities. The warlord personally led the horde in an assault on the Hive Infernus, and as the Imperials began to pull in reserves to counter him, reports came in of attacks in other cities. The orcs' rocks landed in the fire wastes and the dead lands to the north and south of the main continent of Armageddon. These lands were uninhabited, and the Imperial Command did not place much importance on the orcish forces in that area. That was until hundreds of submarines, the size of a full tanker, emerged from the polluted waters near Helsreach and Tempestora. The surprise was successful. Tempestora fell within a matter of days, and in Helsreach defense was aided by gangs managing to hold out long enough until the arrival of the Tempestus Scions and Space Marines forces. Yet half of the Hive was captured by the orcs. In the besieged and heavily bombarded Hive Tartarus, the attackers were repelled, marking the first victory. Much of the Hive and all its industrial complexes were destroyed and looted by the orcs from the Deathskulls clan's scrap mobs. Southward, at Poisoned Plains of Anthrond, a life-critical water purification plant known as Gatana Bay became the battleground for what would later be known as the largest dreadnought battle of this war. The heavy armor vehicles couldn't navigate through the maze of pipes that the plant comprised. Orc death dreads cut through any resistance from the guardsmen, who simply had nothing to oppose these armored behemoths. The tide of the battle was turned only with the arrival of the Space Marines. Ancient Astartes dreadnoughts and a Devastator's teams managed to cleanse the plant area of orcs. Yet during the battle, the facility was irreparably damaged, resulting in all of Armageddon Prime being left without water supply. The third war for Armageddon was intensifying. Billions of people perished. The galaxy's most powerful war machines clashed in battle. The conflict had recently spilled beyond the planet's confines, and worlds located near Armageddon were already ablaze, unable to withstand the ferocious onslaught of the Greenskins. Orcs from across the galaxy felt the powerful concentration of war energies and converged on Armageddon to join in the fray. Rumors circulated that Ghazkull had proclaimed this invasion as Ragnarok, the ultimate battle in which the orcs were to attract the attention of their gods. To counter the Xenos, the Imperium was forced to continually throw fresh troops into the grinder on Armageddon, organizing a special recruitment zone within 1,000 light-years. All human worlds within this zone were required to give a tithe of their population to the Imperial Guard, and all production was switched to military output. The Imperial logisticians, of whom there were arguably more than soldiers themselves, could not fully comprehend the sheer number of people and resources that had been thrown into this war. 25 Astartes chapters, numerous orders of the Sororitas, and 6 Titan legions were now known to be involved. In the Armageddon sector, combined forces from 17 Imperial fleets were present, according to already outdated data collected a year before the war reached its full strength. The Imperium had always feared the unification of such a large number of orcs, and now the worst predictions had come to pass. Even the most stubborn now acknowledge that Armageddon's infrastructure is almost completely destroyed and beyond repair. In fact, the war has long since shifted from being about the planet itself to the entire subsector. And the true purpose of this war is to localize the green threat, confining it within Armageddon's bounds, preventing it from growing even stronger and eventually reaching Holy Terror. Although Ghazkull regretted leaving such a grand battle, he understood that his work was not yet done. Only fate itself could distract an orc from the slaughter that erupted on Armageddon. But Ghazkull was plagued by more and more visions until he finally decided that this war no longer required his presence and could continue without him. Moreover, if Ghazkull's headaches truly foretold visions, the next one promised to be truly grandiose. In the end, the warlord returned to his ship and fully immersed himself in the madness that engulfed his fractured mind. The voices of Gork and Mork had never sounded so loud, echoing in Ghazkull's head. Yet no matter how hard the warlord tried, he could not understand what exactly the gods demanded of him. The pain from the visions made Ghazkull roar and flail in agony. Many orcs would consider the spoils gathered on Armageddon more than rich, but they lacked ambition. Blessed with visions, Ghazkull knew this war was just the beginning. And although he could not precisely say what he was looking for, he was absolutely certain he would not find it on Armageddon. Leaving his lieutenants in command, Ghazkull drifted further away from the war-torn world, only regretting he would not be able to return before his orcs captured the entire planet. As the fleet gained velocity, Ghazkull gathered the weird boys on the bridge of his ship, hoping they would help him decipher the visions. However, all that these oddities managed to do was irritate the orc, for it was hard to calmly endure the terrible headaches while watching weird boys, drooling over themselves, aimlessly wandering around the bridge, gone completely mad. What infuriated the warlord even more was that the usual method of solving problems through heavy blows to the face decidedly did not work. Nevertheless, Ghazkull's departure from Armageddon did not go unnoticed. Imperial augurs detected the departure of the orc ships from the Armageddon and identified one of them as Ghazkull's personal vessel. Within a few days, a pursuit was organized by the forces of two fleets, one commanded personally by Yarik and the second by Black Templar's Marshal Helbrecht. Yarik had once allowed the orc to escape, and it had cost the Imperium dearly. This would not happen again. The Imperial ships, much faster than the orc ones, caught up with Ghazkull's fleet after several weeks and blocked it in the lifeless void of space known as the Haunted Gulf. Realizing there was no escape, Ghazkull decided to send his fleet into an attack, aiming to break through the ranks of Imperial ships. This decision was mad, but the chance of success was still present. Gajkull once again employed a tactic unusual for orcs, using several empty ships as bait. Nevertheless, the numerical superiority of the Imperials took its toll. The counterfire literally tore the orc flotilla apart. Gajkull's own ship received severe damage and lost control. Yarik and Helbrecht prepared for boarding to ensure the warlord's death. The ship quaked from the strikes of lance batteries, literally piercing it through. During one of such jolts, Gajkull lost his footing and fell, hitting his head hard. It was at that moment, from beneath his adamantium skull, bright green light began to break through, bathing everyone in its radiance. This energy was exactly what the weird boys needed. Writhing in convulsions, emitting green glow from their eyes and open maws, they spoke with a resonant voice that belonged to Gork and Mork themselves. Now Gajkull understood what the gods wanted from him. He needed to unite all orcs, to make the galaxy tremble from the greatest war in history, declaring that this war would lead to Ragnarok. When Gork and Mork would reveal themselves to the orcs, the weird boys exploded, showering everyone on the bridge with their innards and releasing a massive amount of green energy that knocked out the Imperial ships. Yarik and Helbrecht could only watch as Gajkull's ship vanished into the warp, realizing that his escape heralded only new troubles for the galaxy. No one could say for sure where and how long the orcs surged through the warp. The words of the gods still echoed in the minds of all aboard until suddenly the ship was thrown back into real space. The orcs approaching the portholes froze in astonishment. They were encircled by void craft of all forms and sizes, yet their appearance was unmistakable for anything else. Gajkull found himself at the very heart of the orc fleet. The orcs, under the leadership of Urgrok the Slayer, to whom this fleet belonged, mistook Gajkull's ship for space debris, and the mech boys started to cut it up for scrap metal. However, this did not particularly concern Gajkull himself. He ordered the mech boys to urgently make use of the teleporter. Identifying the location of the fleet's master was not a difficult task, for directly above them loomed a huge space hulk, resembling a drifting orc fortress in space. Gajkull and his allies were teleported literally blindly, as if guided by the hand of the gods. They found themselves on the deck of the hulk before a surprised Urgrok Dar Slayer and his entourage. Instantly, the deck was awash with blood. Nobs were killed, and Gajkull himself dragged Urgrok from his throne and beat him to near death. A new war was preparing to descend upon the galaxy. However, merely capturing the fleet was not enough. It was necessary to inform the other orcs about the change in leadership. Urgrok's empire had grown so wide that it took Gajkull entire weeks to enforce order. Many orcs willingly rallied under the new banners, while others required this joy to be instilled in them. But when Urgrok himself, having recovered, accepted Gajkull as his war boss, matters accelerated. Orcs are quite widespread across the galaxy and can be found virtually anywhere. It is not surprising that, after some time, Gajkull amassed a new war, scarcely inferior to the one with which he arrived on Armageddon. However, at a certain moment, Gajkull felt surges of green energy on the distant planet of Octaria. Gajkull headed there, wishing to find its source, eliminate a potential competitor, or witness another sign of the gods. Yet, what he found was far more astonishing. Octaria had been orc territory for many millennia. It was this planet that Gorsnik Magash had joined with Gajkull in Golgotha Sector. However, now, after the departure of the warlord, a new orc, a boss from the Death Skulls, Zog Steel Tooth, had seized power on the planet. Despite his liberal use of blue paint, Zog's rule was far from lucky. Attracted by the abundance of biomass, Tyranids invaded Octaria. The war enveloped the entire star system, and the surface of the planet itself turned into a vast battlefield. The constantly warring orcs reached truly enormous sizes, but the Tyranids kept pace, constantly evolving, adapting, and sending ever new reinforcements. Gradually, the insectoids began to gain the upper hand, and just when it seemed they were about to sweep away the orcs, Gajkull's ships appeared in the sky. At first, the orcs on the planet took the newcomers for yet another enemy. However, when not tyranids covered in slime and chitin, but orcs smeared in oil, blood and dirt emerged from the crashing rocks, the greenskins finally managed to properly respond to the insectoid threat, providing fiery support to the suddenly arrived reinforcements. But soon, in the distance, the heavy steps of a creature of gigantic proportions were heard. Hivemind was gearing up to welcome the newcomers. The tyranid's response was frighteningly swift. Gigantic creatures the size of gargants appeared on the horizon, and the hopes of the green-skinned defenders of Octaria crumbled. They knew that these bio-titans were meant to deliver the final blow and sweep the last of the orcs from the planet. The newcomers simply had no chance. After all, no infantry could withstand such might. But Gajkull had something that the orcs of Octaria simply did not know about. The battlefield was drowned in the unnatural color flashes of teleporters, delivering reinforcements to the orcs. And it wasn't just infantry. A vast number of Stompers and Gorkonauts entered the planet's surface, opening fire on the Bio-Titans, and the Burner Boys' mobs at their feet scorched everything that dared to approach the orcish machines. Among the arriving orcs, one could glimpse the banners already known, perhaps, to every orc in the galaxy. The defenders of Octaria knew who had arrived. Gajkull himself entered the fray. To the onlookers, he fought like Gork himself. His mighty blows literally severed the heads and limbs of the insectoids. His custom shooter unceasingly showered the monstrous horde with a monstrous amount of lead, and his power claw with every movement cut short the life of another tyranid. But then, something incredible happened. The ground littered with bodies under Gajkull's feet suddenly gave way, and the warboss himself fell into the hole that formed, from which a moment later a gigantic Morlock burst forth. Wrapping its tail around itself like a snake, the creature let out a piercing, triumphant shriek, knocking down the nearby orcs. However, the Morlock did not have time to stop screaming when something went wrong. The massive creature arched and fell to the ground, causing it to tremble. Unnatural protrusions began to appear on its body until finally the carapace of the Morlock burst in a fountain of tyranid blood and innards, and from within emerged Gajkull himself. The warboss exploded, announcing his victory to all who remained alive. Nothing more could hold back the orcs, shouting the name of their leader. Gajkull continued to rampage among the tyranids, and the orcs of Octaria emerged from their fortresses to join their new leader. Even Zog Steeltooth, the ruler of Octarius, extolled the name of Gajkull, gunning down the living wall of insectoids attempting to withstand the orc onslaught. Soon the entire planet was cleansed of tyrannid creatures. Though Gajkull had little time to prepare, he used it to the maximum. The orc mech boys patched up his armor and armed the fallen rocks with additional anti-aircraft guns, strengthening the planet's defenses. Big mech Archimedes himself was busy refining the teleport and everything else that might cause the tyranids concern. The looming battle seemed even more massive than that on Armageddon, and when a huge shadow covered the stars, Gajkull smiled, baring his fangs. This war is only beginning. After Gajkull left Armageddon, visions began visiting him more frequently. Some of them caused the warboss to contort in agony, others came more clearly and easily. Gajkull witnessed the paintings of battles on Armageddon. He saw how Skargrim tore men apart on his bike, saw those driving him into a frenzy, marching in rows of blood axes. The warlord knew these were not merely visions, but depictions of real events. Sometimes, despite the vast distance, he could even issue orders to the orcs. Once he swore loudly, and the orcs on Armageddon heard his roar. The voices told him that he would have to depart as soon as the battle on Octaria began. He needed to bring war to many more systems so that the orc population could reach a critical mass. In his visions, Gajkull strode across the galaxy, leaving behind a trail of blazing worlds. Armageddon, Octaria. Well, it was time to start thinking about the next target. Currently, Gajkull had left Octaria and leads a fleet numbering more than 5 million ships.